Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius. Germanicus is here. We're at our wine bar by the Thames. A beautiful, soft summer evening. The summer solstice has passed. Those druids who worry us sometimes have had their ceremony at Stonehenge and their other gathering places. They don't much come into Londinium, and when they do, they're pretty obvious. They drag around acting holy. Well, that's the druids. It's summertime, and it's reflective of kickback and philosophize, except we get word from the 21st century, a new battlefront. There is some debate about the word war, so we will not settle that debate. The vice president, Mr. Vance, has said, paraphrase, we're not at war with Iran, we're at war with the Iranian nuclear weapons program. That is unusually careful. We'll go along with the idea that at war is the important part of that sentence. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. In considering that the U.S. has launched a preemptive strike on what we're told are the suspect nuclear weapons sites in Iran, Isfahan, Parchin, I believe, and Fordow. Fordow being the mountain that requires the attention of B-2 stealth bombers and the big bomb, the MOPS. We're told there were 12 of them dropped. We do not have any reason to believe that they were successful or not successful. I'm certain that I've read very carefully that bomb assessment is extremely difficult from the air, and that it takes a great deal of time. You gather metrics, you decide what the site is doing after you've bombed it. You can kill the people, but to destroy a site with accuracy and high probability is very challenging, even for the supermen at the Pentagon. So we'll set that aside, and I'll frame this question to you another way. Russia attacked Ukraine because it said that it was drifting into the EU and NATO, and Russia found NATO a threat to its sovereignty. Ukraine wanted to be a member of the EU, and it's a candidate now, and they tell it all the time. Ukraine wanted to be a member of NATO, it's a candidate now, and they tell it now and again, that's the way we think we should go. We come over to Iran. Iran is a revisionist state, yes. But it's also a member of BRICS, invited by Russia and China. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and Iran is a member. So is Venezuela. It's also, Iran, a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization that was established by China some years ago. Therefore, we're looking at Iran integrated into a separate but co-equal transnational series of organizations that are chiefly about trade, but also about self-defense. We've attacked a member of that alliance, as Russia attacked a member of our alliance. This is what Oscar Wilde would call a distinction without a difference. Help me, Germanicus. How do we solve this? Good evening to you.
Good evening, guys. This is, in many ways, a kind of firming up of a conflict that's been gathering force for some time, a struggle between two emerging successor systems. In the Cold War, there was the so-called free world, and then was the communist world until the Sino-Soviet split, at least. And then a putative sort of third way emerged, called the Third World, after the Bandung Conference. And though that was the system struggle that everyone talked about then. And it really seems after a relatively short period in which the U.S. was the world empire after 1991, that has not only drawn to a close, but we can see the outlines of a struggle or maybe just a competition between two alternative systems. And the BRICS system is actually cohering now, especially the Eurasian part of it. And the Belt and Road Initiative that China poured $1 trillion or more into in our dollars, it seems to be paying off because Iran provides for a significant slice of China's energy needs. And you could look at a war with Iran as having one of its aims to squeeze China, just as the war through Ukraine as a proxy had the goal of squeezing Russia, bringing it down, and thus weakening China. But, you know, China has made counter moves, one of them being the completion just several weeks ago of a rail hub connecting Tehran with Beijing so that Iran can now ship straight across, you know, the Silk Road to China, all that China might need, although it's hard to do that with rail alone. But the fact is that there is this shift, and the war is more likely to firm up the shift than it is to achieve whatever strategic goals are sought by the initiator of the attack. So Russia's attack on Ukraine, which has been successful in its main goal of stopping the westward expansion of NATO to bring Russia down, has also sort of firmed up a solid line. And the sort of Iron Curtain between East and West, between these two new systems, has taken or is coalescing right now, let's put it that way. And a similar kind of line is emerging in the South with Iran. And we don't know about places like Saudi Arabia, which is on the fence, which is trying to maintain relations with us and Israel, but also at the same time petitioning for joining the BRICS. India is also fence-sitting, so is Turkey. So in many ways, what we're looking at is the initial phase of this struggle. It hasn't frozen itself as it did in the Cold War, where you can actually, as Winston Churchill did, use the metaphor of an iron curtain to define something that solid and that immovable. But it looks like we're heading in that direction. And it looks like both sides are aggressively moving toward that. The U.S., of course, is using proxies, really, to make this happen, Israel and Ukraine. And because the U.S. is not in a position to send its legions abroad, it exhausted them in the great Muslim War of 2001 to 2021.
Germanicus, it occurred to me as you're very carefully explicating where we are, I'm thinking around for an analogy that would make sense to the historians in the 21st century. And I don't know why it pops into my mind now and again, because it's a romantic tale that Hollywood changed profoundly. Rizzoli, bring yes. me Harris alive or bring me Rizzoli dead.
Yeah, Ted Harris alive or Rizzoli dead.
And it was during the campaign of 1904, the burst of applause at Chicago as they were nominating Roosevelt for Teddy. Roosevelt for a second term. It's not the Rizzoli part that I'm thinking of. It's that all the warships that would eventually become the powers in the first war showed up. Everybody was claiming a piece of North Africa. It was the drive for colonial empire. The Germans were there, the Japanese were there, the French were there, the British, clearly, and the Americans. And entanglement meant the U.S. got involved in a way that we were the junior partner at that point, you know, for. And I'm thinking, we've just got caught up in their business. This is not our business. We've never been at war with Iran. Ever, or Persia beforehand, but this is the great game, Germanicus. I know that the newspaper audience is not being helped to understand the great game has been going on for several hundred years.
It's good you bring that up because shortly after the little contretemps in Morocco with the Raisuli.
Yes.
There was another, not so much a crisis, but a kind of face-off between Britain and Russia over Iran. And both countries had big business in Iran, and both countries wanted Iran. And Iran was one of only three countries, in the ambit of imperialism that had stayed independent, the others being Ethiopia and Siam, or Thailand. And there was an agreement, finally, in 1908, between Britain and Russia, in which the two decided to divide the country. I think the reason they didn't go to war is that Russia was a deep ally of France, and Britain had just signed the Entente Cordiale with France. And so I think there was a kind of cooling off of this intense animosity between Russia and England, which is, of course, still going on. And Iran was completely humiliated and essentially owned by the two empires, the British and the Russian. And this is something that continued again after World War II. And, of course, during World War II, Iran was completely owned by the Soviet Union, Britain and the United States. And so there's this long heavyweight on Iran, and now it returns again.
The Tehran meeting of the Allies.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to go too far with this because the distinctions are emerging. But it occurs to me that we should say here just for a moment before we move on to the political dynamism back in the U.S. on this, that our statements of the reason we're defending Ukraine is because after us, Russia invades Europe. That's going to be turned on us, Michael. That's Germanicus, they're going to say to their Moscow, Beijing, Tehran, Pyongyang, whoever else is sympathetic in Central Asia, is going to hear from the statement saying the reason they're bombing Iran is because they're coming for you.
Yes. And of course, the obvious fallacy in bombing Iran, and this of course includes the Israeli campaign first and foremost, is that hurting Iran only, it will have the opposite effect. There's no way in which the people of Iran are going to say, let's overthrow this evil religious theocracy and embrace the United States and Israel. It's incredible that should even be mentioned. And so there is now a greater and greater conviction that the U.S. is pushing in the Middle East, as it did in Central Europe and Eastern Europe, is pushing to overthrow Russia and now Iran. And that is the worst thing we could do strategically, because certainly we can hurt Iran just as we hurt Russia. And yet in many ways, they come back stronger, because when you hurt somebody, that strengthens them. That gives them a greater resolution and will and a determination to bring the fight to you. And China can only benefit from this, because Taiwan is the third proxy It's the proxy that is least willing, you know, in contrast to Israel and Ukraine, it's the least willing proxy to do our bidding because they know they'll be destroyed. And so in many ways, what we think of through Iran hurting China, perhaps, is actually achieving the exact opposite effect.
Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. Gaius is John Batchelor. We're in Londinium enjoying ourselves, speculating about the 21st century. We're going to turn to Republican Party politics, which, of course, is not for us. It's not what we do. But we've noticed that there's a new dynamism in terms of a split within the party that was very successful in electing President Trump, but is now at odds with itself. And when we come back, what does this mean for the immediate future, and what does this reflect? What does this reflect in the Republican Party? I mean, since the beginning, I mean, since 1854. When we come back, this is the Friends of History Debating Society. We're in London. It's a pleasant summer evening. We're getting very speculative, but right now, there's reason to believe that what was assumed to be stable—that would be the war in Ukraine and the Israeli conflict with Iran. Is not stable at all. No, everything's changing. Sides are going to be changing soon enough. We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.